Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Raisin Bran? You got to put Raisin Bran up there. Everybody knows it.
It's Mike Shope.
Listen, get your own stupid old dying person team and choose your own cereals.
And the Bulldog.
I shall unleash my fury upon you like the crashing of a thousand waves.
That cereal is soggy. You reach into the fridge for the milk and open the lid on the milk to pour it in there, and that crap is already soggy.
I am untethered and my rage knows no bounds.
That's a problem for a cereal.
A huge problem.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Okay, I made it. Thanks to the guys for picking me up the first hour today. Bulldog is already sick. And I know you're dying for information about this. I had a crown put into my mouth today to fix a broken tooth. And I got out of there like 1:30. I'm like, you know, my mouth is kind of completely numb here. And I might be able to sort of to talk, but it wouldn't sound like me to me. And I got to admit, the thing I was the most sort of bothered by imagining happening here today was taking a drink of water and having it just pour down my face and shirt without being, you know, when you get the Novocaine and your mouth is numb and you really just on one side, you sort of have to just do everything on the other side for a while there, you know, couldn't eat or anything. But I think we are good to go. So thanks again to the guys for filling in, and I'll take it from here. And it's sort of weird for me to sit down and start and have a guest right away, but I'm always happy. It's been a long time for me anyway, since I've had the pleasure of chatting with John Ledyard, who joins me now on the West Her Hotline. John has been on our show many times over the years. Veteran analyst whose work in recent seasons has been centered on the Bucks, who the Bills face on Saturday night. John, how have you been?
Hey, I've been doing really well. Excited that real football is right around the corner. I know you guys are as well. Huge season for Buffalo. So, as always, a pleasure to be on here talking Bills with you.
Thank you, John. And we can do this twice this year because, in a rare thing, the Bills will play the Buccaneers in the preseason and the regular season. Do you know anything about how, and I really don't, so I don't mean to put you on the spot if you don't, but how these schedules get made and how it is that these teams are playing each other in a season where they will meet again?
The preseason part of it is really kind of convenience relationships. I think they kind of work that out sort of that way, you know, really like, oh, yeah, we've been doing this for a long time. We've good relationships. It's kind of convenient for us, the convenient trip, expenses. I think all of that sort of is how kind of how it gets worked out. How that works with the Bills and the Bucs this year, I'm not positive. I haven't thought about it.
Right. It's not like you're right around the corner here. But, you know, I'm looking forward to Saturday. Who are we going to see from Tampa's side that we know of? Is this a game for the Bucs where everybody sits?
Well, everybody's sitting because of injury in Tampa Bay. So.
Yeah, right.
No, I'm kidding. This is not a game. It sounds like none of the starters are going to play for the Bucs, which will mean they went through the preseason without some guys, you know, Baker Mayfield, Mike Evans, getting any snaps at all in the preseason, which is just as well. I think more and more teams are moving that direction in a lot of ways. So you won't see any of the regular starters, I would say, play for Tampa Bay in this game. Now, there's still a couple jobs that are sort of like up in the air maybe a little bit where you kind of expect, like, you'll know who will start. Will, you know, Servacia Dennis be the starter next to Lavonte David at linebacker? Will Jacob Parrish be the nickel corner starting? Will he be held out of this game, or will he that still be part of the quote-unquote competition, even though everyone kind of expects him to win the starting job there? You know, so offensively, I think those roles are mostly set in stone, but with Chris Godwin and Jalen McMillan set to miss the beginning of the year, will, you know, Igbuka play at all, or will he be considered a starter and not play at all in that game? Then I think probably is the case. And so it'll be pretty limited in terms of there's not many jobs even up for competition on the Bucs starting lineup. So it'll be pretty limited in terms of the starters you see.
Do you have a particular philosophy about that? For me, I guess maybe this will sound like a cop-out. Maybe it is one where, you know, I don't need them to play. I kind of like the idea of it for just simple reasons, but don't get hurt. And I know you can't play like that. I mean, an injury to an important player would just bring up all the questions, and that's why the league does it the way it does. But, man, I mean, the preseason is just sort of annoying enough when you're getting ready for the real thing, and especially now when so many stars just never see the field.
Yeah, I think more and more teams have been gravitating toward these padded practices or these joint padded practices against other teams where they can control the physicality and the emotion and the momentum, all those things a little bit more than maybe they can in a game setting. Like, for example, you can, I mean, you can't be certain of anything, but you can basically make it in these settings that your quarterback doesn't get hurt, in these joint practices setting your quarterback doesn't get hit, no contact, things like that. Obviously in the game you can't. So I think teams are gravitating more and more toward now almost, I think maybe every team in the league does it, where they joint practice at least against one team, maybe against multiple teams, and they feel like that replaces the game. So if your players play one-off, everything looks crisp enough in those joint practices where it's, you know, probably 85% full speed, something like that, but your quarterback's not at risk of an injury, you're probably not going to get a guy leveled like you will on game day. The players are a little bit more cautious about that stuff. Whereas in the game, you get the emotions going up with the game, the preamble, all that stuff built up to the game, and you got, you know, it's kind of an old bard out there in terms of the things that will happen. And so I think teams just feel like, whether it's smart or not, whether it's accurate or not, they can control the risk of injury a little bit more, but still get the same benefit of going full speed. So I think you're going to see a lot more starters playing in those joint practices, and that'll become more and more of a big deal and less in preseason.
Yeah. Then I guess maybe we should be able to buy tickets to those. And not have to, as season ticket holders, have to buy the preseason games.
We really should be. I mean, that is like the joy practice. If you, I mean, you've probably, I'm sure, been to some. I've been to some. Like, it is. I mean, it is. The, cool. The tempers that flare in between is really fun.
Yes. And the Bears, the Bills went to Chicago last week for this, and the Bears did have fans in attendance. With John Ledyard at Ledyard NFL Draft, I know a lot of your work over the years and our conversations have been about the NFL draft and rookies coming into the league. Tampa made what I'd call one of the more intriguing picks of the first round this year with Emeka Ebuka. You mentioned him, and he seems to have, with the injuries coupled with this, elevated, impressed enough where maybe he wouldn't play in this game anyway. I don't know. But yeah. What did you think of the pick when they made it, and how good does he look?
He looks outstanding, looks absolutely phenomenal, and that was what I expected. He was, other than Travis Hunter, Ebuka was my number one wide receiver in the class, and I think he was my ninth overall player, maybe. Wow. And the reason's kind of simple. I mean, he is just a really well-rounded player who I think early on in the process, people were like, well, he's just not that great at any one thing. Well, he could have gone to the NFL and been a first-round pick the year before. He chose to go back because he wanted to go back, and he thought Ohio State had that much of a chance of making noise, and he wanted to be a part of that type of history at the school. And so that was his objective. I think that was kept really quiet at the time because there were other really exciting, intriguing pieces that people kind of became enamored with. But even at Ohio State, obviously, with Jeremiah Smith being there. But if you watched him, you just saw a guy who was really ready for the pro game. You know, a lot of people are kind of still scouting wide receivers, and you guys know this from watching Shakir break out last year. A lot of people are scouting wide receivers and saying, okay, where is the guy that can be my number one and can win outside the numbers, vertically down the field, moss people, do all this crazy stuff after the catch, all these kind of guys. And there are certainly a couple guys like that, but almost all those guys can move around, play different positions, can run the full route tree from any alignment. In a league that's playing so condensed from an offensive perspective, everybody's in reduced splits. They're bringing wide receivers tight to the line of scrimmage. Everybody's getting a two-way go. Some of that stuff is less important than guys who just know how to play, period, but rather than have these unbelievable traits. We've seen that with Puka Nacua. We've seen that with Amon-Ra St. Brown. We've seen all these kind of guys, you know, Shakir last year, who can play in the reduced split role with the two-way goes and use all their football IQ and their technique to their advantage. It doesn't hurt that Ebuka is also really big and strong and also really athletic, but people didn't give him credit for any of those things early on in the process. And then as the process went on, it was like, oh, wait, he ran a 4.4 at his pro day? Like, oh, he's actually pretty fast. If you watch him on tape, he's running by everybody for Oregon. That's a pretty good organization. Like, okay, like, and you're watching and you're like, okay, I actually don't think this guy really has that many limitations. And everybody already knew he caught everything, he could run every route and could block. And so he just fits the modern game really, really well. And I think people maybe just were looking at traits of wide receivers and say, well, this guy's bigger, faster. But if you watch the modern game and you see what really matters right now in the NFL at this position, he really had pretty much all those traits and characteristics. So it's not a surprise to me he's hit the ground running. And obviously, from a value perspective, with Chris Godwin missing probably the first month of the season, he's going to give them a lot right away.
Love to see it. John Ledyard, my guest. I'm Mike Shope. Bulldog is off today. This is WGR. I want to use the word quietly here, but you're being more embedded with the Bucs. It may not seem like it's the right word, but I would say the Bucs have won the NFC South 4 years in a row pretty quietly. The last time they didn't was a Super Bowl winning team when New Orleans won the NFC South and the Bucks won the Super Bowl anyway. So that's a pretty good run. I mean, the Bills are on five, but they've kind of dominated this division most of those years, and the Bucks couldn't quite get away with calling it that. So pretty good run. I mean, Bowles and Mayfield, the story he's been. Do you think maybe the Bucks don't get enough credit?
I mean, they never get enough. They didn't get enough credit when they won the Super Bowl. People moved on like the next day, I think, just because it was like, oh, Tom Brady again, and the Buccaneers are a small market. And so, yeah, from that perspective, they probably don't get enough credit. And I'm somebody who grew up, you know, and live now that I've moved out of the Tampa Bay area, still like in the Pittsburgh area. So the Steelers, it's, you know, you turn on ESPN and they talk every day. Well, the Steelers haven't won a playoff game in forever. Like, they're right. Every offseason, it's like, is this the year? Is this Mike Tomlin and the Steelers? It's like, well, they didn't do anything. So a lot of that stuff is just really kind of ratings based, a lot of the conversation. If you watch what the Bucks have done, the thing that's been really impressive is just the era navigation, right? To go from an era with Tom Brady and an older team that would won a Super Bowl and probably, if they don't suffer all those injuries, had a real good chance the next year, lost to the Rams late in that game, but had a real good chance to do it again the next year. And I think then had to navigate out of that era after the Brady down year where they still won the division into another one with other young players that I think that was just really difficult to do. Most teams, even the Eagles, who are like the preeminent organization in the league, went through some dry spell down years when they transitioned eras from the Wentz era to Wentz Foles to Jalen Hurts. And so I think the fact that the Bucks have been able to do that, yes, the division's been weaker, but the Bucks really haven't been that much stronger. They've just been better coach, better run organization, better drafting organization. So to me, that's one of the things that's been really impressive about them. As you know, that kind of leadership starts at the very top of the organization, and where Jason Lay has become one of the best GMs in the NFL, that ability, his ability to continue to rebuild the roster, retool the roster with good young players, even as undrafted free agents, that's something that, you know, this is certainly with Ian Bean, two of the best GMs in the league, and you've seen them kind of fortify the roster and navigate eras. You know, the Bills haven't done that at quarterback maybe necessarily yet, but you've certainly seen it with their defense, especially last year. It was a big year era of coming out of those safeties and Milano being hurt and Edmonds and all these changes, and then they had to navigate the era and replace everything while remaining competitive. It's just very difficult to do. Not many teams can do it.
I share your perspective when it comes to the Steelers, for example, by comparison with the Bucks, and just certain teams get the attention. And the Steelers have not won a playoff game since the 2016 season, which they did, by the way, without scoring a touchdown in Kansas City, that divisional round game. So, John, the Mayfield story, what is your sort of perspective on him? Like, is he somebody that you were really surprised to see flourish with Tampa? Always interesting, of course, here to think about that 18 draft, Mayfield at the top. Allen and Lamar Jackson have been stars almost the whole time. Then you have Mayfield and Darnold, who just kind of reemerged unexpectedly, I would say. Maybe that puts it mildly, especially in Darnold's case.
Yeah, with Mayfield, you just get a lot of variance. Like, you get the extreme good and the extreme bad. And so it's about how often he can really find the balance. You're guaranteed to get both of those, I think. How often can he find the balance and limit kind of the low-end stuff is going to be the question with him. He's just physically kind of capable of doing everything. When he got to the Bucs, it was kind of like, okay, well, can he play composed in the pocket? Well, he's done that. He doesn't always do it, but he's done it a ton to the point where, like, he's even able to have really good seasons. Well, can he throw to the middle of the field? Is he going to do that consistently? A lot of shorter quarterbacks have struggled with that. Though he showed the last couple of years he's been able to do that very willingly, throw to the middle of the field. He's got a cannon for an arm. He can throw the ball down the field. So he really, I mean, he's made tons of plays out of structure. He's been unbelievable out of structure in Tampa Bay. But he isn't such a freak that he's going to live in that way either and always be successful. So He's one of the most interesting quarterbacks in the league, because you really have two groups of quarterbacks that most people talk about in the league. The guys who are clearly the guys that will have you in every year, the Josh Allens, the Lamar Jacksons, the Burrows, the Mahomes, those guys that will have it in it every year. You're guaranteed, because those guys are so good, to have it in it. And then you have the guys that are probably solid every year, but you wonder if they're ever going to be good enough to actually win it all. There's a good number of those kind of guys. Mayfield in the same game can represent both parties, and that's what makes him such an interesting player, I think, is he throws the all the touchdown pass last year, all the scoring, all the efficiency. Oh, but he also led the league turnover-worthy plays, and he got sacked way more times than anybody should behind what might have been the best pass protection group in the league. So he just can kind of devolve at times, and that is the – you live – it's sort of – it's like a poor man's Matt Stafford, if you remember, especially before Stafford got to like the perfect nucleus that was the Rams organization, where it was like, man, sometimes Matt Stafford was the only reason the Lions were even competitive. And other times, like, he would throw him out of a game because he was just too ballsy, too aggressive. That's sort of what you get with Baker Mayfield. But in terms of leadership and the team following him, every single dude on the team would take a bullet for him. Like, they all absolutely love him. And that's where he and Josh Allen, I think, have really found common ground, where Allen sort of always had that maturity beyond his years. Baker had to grow into that, but he's found that now. And I think you are definitely looking at two of the guys that are most beloved in terms of the leadership of their team. And he has really become the face of the franchise. It's pretty crazy.
I can buy that. It is quite a stat line last year. 4,500 yards, 41 touchdowns, 16 picks, 40 sacks, like you alluded to. You know, those tiers or those different categories for quarterbacks, to put it another way, that you talked about, there's a big difference in being in the NFC. You know, like, when you think about the hierarchy in the AFC, guys who are not on that top tier, let's just see if they can ever get it done, right? I mean, maybe that's Trevor Lawrence or Justin Herbert, a couple of obvious examples. In the NFC, I mean, the Eagles were so good, but there seems to be much more of a window. I'm not saying anything controversial by that. Yeah. So maybe, I mean, it happened with Stafford. It happened with Hurts. Maybe it's Mayfield. Maybe it's Prescott, Jordan Love. Who knows?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, the weird thing about the conferences right now is the NFC has much better teams. Even if you look at the top of the teams in the AFC, I think you'd find some things to get concerned about with Buffalo, with Baltimore, and with Kansas City right now in terms of the roster. Mm-hmm. You look at the NFC, you look at some of these rosters, like, the rosters are unbelievable, but like, all the best quarterbacks are in the AFC. So it's sort of like, it feels like the NFC is kind of wide open, but there's also way more competition. I mean, are the Bears like the third worst team in the conference right now? And they would it really be surprising if Ben Johnson sneaks them into the playoffs? Like, it's just so competitive. And then you look in the AFC and you're like, well, you could probably take 6-7 teams out of it right now, maybe even before it even gets started. So, you know, I think there's just a huge difference, disparity in the conference in that way. And obviously, you know, in terms of what you'd expect to see in the Super Bowl, you know, everybody's expecting to see one of Baltimore, Buffalo, and Kansas City. And outside of Philly, I think people would put a bunch of teams in the NFC possibly in there and not be surprised. So it's really been a funny distinction between the two conferences right now, in which the NFC seems to just have so much parity. But because there isn't a lot of elite, high-end, consistent quarterback play, there's kind of anybody's guess how things are going to shake out. You get a magic run like Washington had, despite all their roster flaws, just because their quarterback looked like he might be one of them ones. Whereas in the AFC, you know which three or four are going to be standing at the end of every year. If Burrow's team can give him enough help, he'll be in there too. And it's been that way for a little while now, it feels like.
John, just a couple minutes here before we let you go. I know you've had a keen interest in the Steelers, if I know you well enough, like, for most of your life, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that was your team coming up. Everybody, sure, they get their share of attention, as you said, but everybody does kind of want to know how that's going to go with Aaron Rodgers. Talking about Mayfield and the variance, I mean, maybe Rodgers doesn't have the upside that he used to. That seems probably right. But, man, he doesn't throw picks. So, I don't know. Like, can you see it going well?
I think I could see them be the 7th seed again type of outcome. Like, I think that's possible for sure. The defense should be really, really good. And last year it should have been way better than it was. And frankly, I don't think it was that well-coached of a unit. And so I think this year they've certainly fortified the biggest weakness at corner. They've given themselves an actual nickel, a guy who can play in the nickel with force, which is something every defense really needs. You guys know that, watching Teron Johnson play, how important that role is for a team. And I think that the Steelers feel like now with Jalen Ramsey, even though he's older, like, I think he's still able to do a lot of those things that they need and were missing in that defense. So they have definitely improved the talent level of the secondary, which was the weakest group. Even if Minka isn't there anymore, the way they used him was just so far from impact, I mean, impact type of role, that I actually don't think, even though he could have been used in a better way, the actual way they were going to use him, it's actually probably not that difficult to replace and still get above the bar play. Whereas what they were missing and what they found in him and Jalen Ramsey, I think, was a lot harder to find. So I do think the defense can be really, really good offensively. I really don't see it. I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball very well. Rodgers can still make some throws, but just the lack of mobility and the fact that he doesn't want to get hit so bad, I think it's just going to – all that combination of those things to me are concerning enough that I really doubt this team is going to have any sort of a high ceiling in a league that you have to score points, and I think they're going to really struggle to run the ball a lot on this young offensive line, right? I mean, the four of these five guys who are going to be starting for them are recent draft picks, and, you know, the right tackles, Troy Fautan, who's barely played in the league because of an injury last year. So there's just a lot of unknown. I think there's a lot of talent there. That group, how well and how fast they come together, is going to be really telling for how their season goes. But even if it's a good group, I just think groups that young in the offensive line typically take a while to gel and mesh and be at their peak performance. And when you couple that with a quarterback who really can't move at all and Aaron Rodgers, like, I do think it's going to be enough negative moments where the offense is going to be very limited and very siloed in terms of what they can do.
Last thing, John, let's wrap on a Bills question, and I might want to focus on their recent drafts for as much effort as you put into studying the draft. The Bills have gotten away with what their misses, you know, because of Allen, and they've really, of course, as you know, dominated here in this division for years. Just playoff losses are the thing. But the last couple of drafts have people questioning them a little bit, whether it's Elam, who's already gone, Kincaid, Coleman, Cole Bishop seems a little iffy, although it's probably too early to say more than that. Yeah. And then Hairston this year is injured already, so we can't really say much about him. But I'd like to know what you thought of him as a prospect.
Yeah, Hairston is really interesting to me because of the scheme in college, I think, was so unique. He played basically like an off-man type of scheme at Kentucky, which just isn't really in there in the NFL. Like, they obviously play some zone. You would see him sometimes in cover three, basic stuff, you know, spot dropping type stuff at Kentucky. But a lot of his normal, like, early down stuff was like basically he would take like two steps and then he's just kind of reading and reacting the receiver across from him. And so it was kind of like an off man read and react type of scheme. And not a lot of NFL teams run scheme like that. So if you wondered just what was the learning curve going to be, and you had kind of assumed it was going to be a little bit challenging just because I'm sure communications and teaching points and all that stuff are different. And then he got hurt. So it's really been hard to tell how fast his transition is going to go to the NFL. The athletic traits are there and ball skills are there, but I think there's going to be a lot of technical, mental lapses that he needs to make up for with splash plays basically early on. So I think there's a path for him to being a pretty high variance guy, like where there's the lows are low, the highs are highs early on in his career in the NFL. He's a really different player than the other guys they have, which kind of made it, I just didn't see that one coming type of thing from a fit perspective. I know there was maybe some interest, but I do wonder how he's going to be able to mesh into what they do, or are they going to change some of what they do to fit his skill set? But this has been, traditionally a team that certainly can match up a little bit more in man last year, I think, even with Christian Benford playing as well as he did, but traditionally a pretty zone-heavy defense. And so there's just a lot of mental stuff, and in college, sometimes when it was pure zone, he did struggle a little bit more with that rather than the normal staple of their scheme, which was, I'm looking at one guy and reacting to what he does. Now you have to see more of the picture at once. That can be a real challenge for a guy making the transition. So he'll be fascinating to watch, I think, this season if he does get back healthy with the time that's missed. How does he work his way back into a group that I think is pretty weak outside of Christian Benford?
Yeah, I was going to say what you said there at the end. It seems like for his sake and for the team's that this is important time missed by his injury. And my guess is we don't see him by week one, but I don't really know. Hopefully I'm wrong. John, thanks for your time. It's been too long. Appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely, Mike. Thanks for having me. I always appreciate it.
You're welcome. John Ledyard at Ledyard NFL Draft on Bulldog, would call it X because he's a conformist. He's not here today, not feeling well, sorry to say. I made it. I think I've talked myself out of the numbness phase, by the way. I mean, maybe I should have put in a better effort and just talked to myself or called somebody and just, do you mind if I just talk for 20 minutes and maybe the Novocaine will wear off? But now I feel like I'm mostly 100%, close to 100%. 803-0550 to join me on the phones. Trey White, we don't know, but not a great sign. His leaving practice early today. Sal Capaccio will join me at 5. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
He has a lot of pride in who he is and what he does and how he does things, and confidence in himself as a competitor and a football player. And those are all good things, but at the end of the day, the work has got to be put in, and he put in work this offseason, starting with the end of the season last year. So, you know, again, I tip my cap to him, because to say it is one thing, but to do it is another, and that's what separates a lot of people.
Sean McDermott on Keon Coleman there. Mike Shope here. Bulldog is off today. Thanks for listening. I was off for an hour, but feel good now. Got a crown. You ever have one of those? Has the show ever sounded older? A crown? What's that? Broken tooth? Got around to having basically it sort of, well, a new piece is attached to the piece that's still there. And I have to go back. Didn't quite work all the way, so I have to go back. Those of you watching on YouTube or the Twitch, see how effortlessly I can take a drink of this water? Like it's nothing. 2 hours ago, 3 hours ago, if not 2 hours ago, it just goes right down my chin, right down to the floor. It would have been very bad. I said already, it was the number one thing I was sort of kind of freaked out about, thinking about, you know, getting here on time today. So I appreciate being given that extra hour. I've perfected, often it's me making the coffee in the afternoons. So there are the packets up there in the cupboard. And I have perfected biting off the corner of the packet perfectly so that enough of a slit I can tear off and it sort of pours at the perfect speed into the filter. Today I just, out of habit, went to do that. I could not even figure out how to bite. I mean, just nope. So we had to go to plan B on that one, but just perfectly able to do that on a regular basis. It's a talent that goes wasted, mostly. So Trey White was hurt, and who knows? I don't. We don't know yet just what, how bad it is, what he's got, but it's something you didn't want to see. And, you know, the obvious takeaway is, wow, like if he's not healthy, then what? I mean, a lot is kind of riding on him, more than I feel great about, you know, just Trey White. The next phase or a different angle when thinking about the takeaways, maybe you kind of wondered about that already with, even with Hairston healthy as a rookie. I mean, a lot of fans are probably still scarred by the Elam experience. So what are the Bills in the secondary is one of the bigger questions. And it, I guess, got even bigger today with that injury. I'm almost never somebody to read hard into, you know, camp reports. Like somebody had a good day. What did they do? They broke up a couple of passes, made a couple of plays. I mean, just not a lot to go with. And when coaches, as almost always happens, are going to give you the positive slant on a guy, it can be hard to really know what coaches are thinking, what the team really has in a particular case. White, as popular as he's been, it's a long shot, I think, for him to come here, come back to Buffalo, and be adequate. I mean, is that a little bit pessimistic sounding? Long shot to be adequate? I kind of felt that way when they did it, that it was a player who I think has a lot of respect among players and could be a depth piece. And then when Hairston went down, we're looking at, well, he's even before, again, probable week one starter, moves to almost definite, and now who knows. So even the Bills have had their issues, you know, other teams would love to trade places with them in these kind of cases for as well, as good as they've been, but they've gotten away with it. Yesterday, or the day before, I think it might have been Tuesday, we're talking about Bishop on the heels of the game in Chicago, and Sean McDermott spoke on Tuesday morning about, you know, having some concern about what they've got in him, other than Taylor Rapp at safety, what they've got. And a quote or two emerged from 2 years ago when McDermott was talking about Terrell Bernard in the same kind of way. And I can appreciate the effort made to try to maybe calm people down a little bit if they were not calm. about Bishop. And, well, you know, coaches talk this way about other guys, and here's Bernard, and Bernard worked out pretty well. But it doesn't really matter to me that's out there, you know, because I think it's reasonable to wonder what the Bills have at safety, and I think it's reasonable to wonder if in the secondary as a whole they might be vulnerable. So will, if that's even true, will this be a thing that they can get away with like they've been able to at different positions, losing Milano for long stretches, Douglas last year? Like, their defense did take a step back, but it wasn't like, I mean, they won 13 games. So we don't know, but hopefully White is okay. Just don't have word yet. Sal will join me at 5, and we'll see what he knows. He was there. There are two preseason games tonight, the Steelers at the Panthers and the Patriots at the Giants. The latter of those two games is an Amazon Prime game. The Steelers are favored in Carolina. I saw 5.5. And hey, listen, don't give me that look. I know the point spreads of the preseason games, because when I want to know at any sport, pretty much in any situation, when I want to know who's playing today, tonight, it's the betting apps where that's where I'll go. And it's not because I'm so eager to find out how many points the Panthers are getting. I just want to know, like, what's the schedule? You know, you could go to ESPN.com for that. You could have NFL app or something, or I don't know if we have that, but that's where I think to go to find out the schedule. Even like Pro Football Reference, which is going to be up on my computer 24/7, 365. It's not going to have, it's not as easy to find it. So that's why I know the spreads there. Why was I even defensive about that? Pittsburgh at Carolina at 7, Pittsburgh by 5.5, and the Giants are 6.5-point favorites at home against New England. Is that Jackson Dart? I don't know. Are we getting Jackson Dart again? Is he done enough to not need to play in this game? It's the last one, so you're going to play the last guys on your depth chart, I think, mostly. But he's also a rookie, and I could see the argument, you know, this is always there to get him more action. It doesn't look like by the spread that New England is expected to do much with their lineup tonight. There were a couple of trades yesterday, wide receiver trades. I mean, absolute depth, deep dive names. Devon Vele, traded by Denver to New Orleans, was one. The Saints trade a fourth-round pick for a 28-year-old backup receiver named Devon Vele from Denver. And the Saints have, I think, definitively become the team in the NFL that does the stupidest things. Whether that's their draft picks, contracts, you know, extending guys past their prime. The Saints have become that team. They have yet to bottom out in the standings, really. They might do that this year. They're expected to be one of the two or three worst teams in the NFL. But just, I can't tell you what I would sound like if the Bills were to trade a fourth-round pick for this player. And, you know, this is an environment where we're always holding out hope that the Bills are going to go add a receiver, but this is just not how I would do it. And, you know, it's not even a good comparison, the Bills, because they're trying to win. I mean, the Saints could be trying to win, but they seem really far away. And why you would trade a draft pick, you'd want to do the opposite of this if you're a team projected to be among the worst in the NFL, not trade for, I mean, 28 years old. That is a weird one. Mike Shope here at 803-0550. Sal joins me at 5. This is WGR. September. The next show we'll do together, Ross will be on. It'll be, you know, week one of the NFL season. Right. So close. 803-0550 is the number. Just talking to Sal about the Buccaneers a little bit. They're the Bills' third and final preseason opponent coming up on Saturday night. And Sal brought up some of the history with the Bucs. You got to think that overtime game that the Bills lost in Tampa was really a great game. That was a classic. The big Fournette run, wasn't it? Or was it someone else? Was it Fournette who ended that game with the long? No, it wasn't. It was Perryman. Fournette had a long one to start the scoring in that game, and it was Brady to Breshad Perryman in overtime for the Bucks that day. Not a lot of big games over the years between these two teams, but that was probably, maybe easily, the best. The Bills are 1.5-point favorites in their opener against the Ravens, and the Bucks are the same 1.5-point favorites in their Week 1 game at Atlanta. Interesting that they'd be favored there. What do we want to do with that? Tampa Bay minus 1.5 at Atlanta. It might be the highest total of the opening week. No, it's not. 47.5. Wow, Baltimore Buffalo is 51.5. I did not realize that. That's a pretty high number. There's a 49.5 Detroit and Green Bay, and those are the top two. Steelers Jets 38.5. That's the range. 51.5 Ravens Bills. Bills by 1.5, so 26.5 to 25. That's right at what the playoff game was. Basically, the market for this one, Week 1, is basically identical to what the playoff game was, right at it. Survivor is coming. Oh boy. I mean, that's, again, referring to the next time Bulldog and I are in here together. There'll be picks, there'll be Survivor, there'll be fantasy lineups. Not just drafts anymore, but lineups. In fact, I think that night is our draft with Paul Hamilton. It might be that night. Very exciting times. Week 1 Survivor. You know the drill here. You're picking one, let's just make it winner as opposed to loser, but they have those two, loser pools. You're picking one winner each week, no spread. And here are your top candidates for Week 1, because you know you want to know this. You want to be thinking about this right now. It would be Denver minus 7.5 at home against Tennessee. Philadelphia in the Thursday night opener minus 7 against Dallas. Washington is a 6-point favorite against the Giants. Arizona is a 6-point favorite at the Saints. Saints getting no respect. Doesn't surprise me. And so those are your top four spreads, and those aren't even that high. Cincinnati, Week 1 is always precarious because nobody knows anything yet, as opposed to the other weeks where we're all very capable of predicting NFL games. Cincinnati at Cleveland is minus 5.5. Those are your top five favorites in Week 1. I think because 7.5 is the smallest number there, nobody's going to be really chalky. Like, there isn't one. If there were one 14-point, New Orleans at Kansas City or something like that in Week 1, where that would probably be a double-digit spread, that's a Survivor pick I think you want to avoid. Because too many people in your league will pick the Chiefs in that hypothetical. So you want to avoid that. I love Survivor pools, but I almost never am in one because I don't want to play against people that have like five entries or, you know, people who are working together, which is, I mean, almost impossible to prevent. But when you have that, you know, you sort of build a little consortium within the pool and you've got two or even more than two people sort of making sure they don't pick the same teams, it's kind of working as a team. And I just would not want to try to, I do not want to try to beat that, you know, and win Survivor pools as a solo artist. And in some of these, you do get the right to, you know, have numerous teams and you can just do the same thing on your own. Just pick, I got five games here, 5.5 and up. I have five entries. I'll just pick all five or something like that. I mean, it's what you want. It's what you do to win, I guess. But that's why, unless I can convince myself to pour money into one of these things and have a lot of entries myself just doesn't feel right to me, then I tend to avoid it. I do play in Joe Ostrowski's, that I will tell you. That's a bigger one, and I guess the allure of a possible huge payout is enough. So you've got, let's do some more here. Those are the five. Who's my pick going to be of those five? Philadelphia minus 7, doubt it. Definitely not Washington. I'm not going to give 6 with Washington against the Giants. I don't know. Maybe I'm trying too hard there. not comfortable with Washington off of that one amazing, unforeseen year as, I mean, it's not that big a spread, but as like a safe bet as a favorite going into 2025. I'm not comfortable there. We'll see what happens with Terry McLaurin, but I'm not feeling that confident in Washington. And the Giants, the one thing people keep saying about, well, they keep saying a lot of things about the Giants, and many of them are mean. But one thing you do hear about them, it used to be that the Jets got this. I'm sure I said it a lot 2-3 years ago with the Jets. Oh, but there's a lot of talent. The Jets had the offensive and defensive rookies of the year on their roster, and they had Breece Hall, who might have won had he not gotten hurt, right? Was it Garrett Wilson and then Sauce Gardner? So the Jets got that compliment. The Giants get that compliment now, especially on defense. How, like when they came to play the Bills, Abdul Carter and three or four other guys, like the Giants have playmakers on defense, and maybe could be, their schedule is brutal, but otherwise maybe could be an interesting fantasy defense pick. I mean, probably not being picked hardly ever, and the schedule is part of that. You don't want to, in my opinion, a lot of people do it this way with defenses. You want to, you know, maybe pick a different one each week, streaming they call it. And so you're not really thinking so much about the whole season. You're looking at week one. Arizona is a team that gets drafted in fantasy for defense because they play the Saints in week one. That's, we had that one, 6-42. So 24-18, 18 implied total for their opponent. You might like Arizona as a fantasy option. So anyway, the Giants have that. I wonder if offensively with Malik Nabers, running game is the running game, is Wilson competent enough? Is there enough left where he can keep them in games and even beat people? And I don't know. Like, again, they have it really tough. It's almost cruel because the Giants have been so bad. And now you've got, you know, Dable and maybe Joe Shane are up against it this year. But, I mean, listen to this. At Washington, at Dallas, Kansas City, Chargers, Saints. Okay, there's a game where they might be favored. Eagles at Denver. Eagles again. San Francisco, who I think probably will be good. Bounce back year. Super easy schedule. Cake schedule. At the Bears. Green Bay. At Detroit. I mean, this is 12 games in, and the Giants have one game where they look like even or better than their opponent. You could say the Bears, I guess, but I wouldn't. You've got at New England after that, Washington again, Minnesota, at Vegas, and then Dallas. I mean, that is a brutal schedule for a team that's been so bad. Where's my last place schedule benefit? The Giants are wondering. So, Survivor, I'll get to an answer. I'm trying to make it on the fly here. Don't feel like I want to go Philadelphia. Definitely want to avoid Washington. Cincinnati at Cleveland, maybe. Arizona at New Orleans, maybe. And then the fifth one was Tennessee, Denver. Those all make a lot more sense to me. The Bengals, everybody kind of knows about how they've had slow starts. And I feel like that's probably baked into that spread. So maybe the Bengals. And then also the Cardinals, who are the Cardinals to give 6 on the road in week one. But a glaring siren about how bad the market thinks the Saints will be. This is Mike Shope. I'll be right back. Thanks for listening to WGR.